Welcome to the Go Set a Watchman Read Along Podcast. I'm Bubba.
And I'm Tasha.
And today, folks, we're going to cover up the rest of Harper Lee's precursor, her first draft, her first attempt at a novel, To Go Set a Watchman, as she was on the path to her classic, her beloved To Kill a Mockingbird. Tasha, we finished the book, and at the, you know, in that preview podcast, I said I thought it would be real difficult for this to be a good book. I said it'd be a miracle if it was a good book. And sadly, I think it wasn't a good book. I think there were some good passages in it. She's certainly capable of turning a phrase and writing some good sentences. But as far as a storyline in this book, it left me wanting. On Goodreads, I gave this 2 stars out of 5. How about you?
I gave this also 2 stars out of 5 on Goodreads. Yes, I just feel like this was, even as a standalone, and even if we never knew what To Kill a Mockingbird was, I just think this is isn't a great story. I think part of it is because I don't know what the story is. There is no story.
Maybe it's there at the end, a young woman learning to see her father as a human being rather than as a god. Maybe it's about a young girl coming to grips with some inherent prejudices and racism in her family. It's tough. It's difficult. There are times in these final couple of chapters where I didn't like Jean Louise. I didn't like Scout. And I certainly don't think you're supposed to feel that way. I don't know. What did you think about that?
Well, I think you can have an unlikable protagonist, but there has to be something. Usually it's that person deals with stuff or reacts to things that make them likable, even though they themselves are not unlikable as a character. And I just think a lot of it is that until, as we will talk about it later, until she gets to the end, she doesn't really do anything. She's just sort of observing. And I find that her observations sometimes become very naive.
Which ones? Like, give me an example.
Well, one is her repeated phrase of color. She was colorblind is kind of annoying.
Yeah, it's not just her referring to herself as colorblind. It's people in one of these last chapters. Uncle Jack refers to her as colorblind.
Yeah, I think it's a little naive, and then especially for this character that is supposed to be a little different. Just some of her dealings with her Henry, and she's just not particularly sophisticated in why she says she doesn't want to marry him.
But she shouldn't marry him. I mean, does she have...
She shouldn't marry him, but I found the way that and the reason why is that she handles all these other interesting stories, which we'll talk about, but her falsies and things that where she's talking about instances that happened as a child, and as a teenager, they're so interesting and nuanced. And then the minute she's sort of dealing with the Citizens Council, it's just painted in broad strokes. And it's all of a sudden, I feel like we're looking through what maybe a 9-year-old would look at things.
What I would say, is there anything about these final bits of chapter that you liked? There were certain things. Uncle Jack, I'm still not sure he's a likable character, but I did agree with this quote of his where Uncle Jack says, "The time your friends need you is when they're wrong, Jean Louise. They don't need you when they're right." I thought that was a great sentence and a great sentiment.
Yes, and he also, I think he coins the watchman, right? Every man's conscience.
Right.
Is his watchman. So he has some good lines. And I think, you know, him trying to encourage Jean Louise to stay is a definite, that was, I think, an added plus. I think what would be interesting is for her to have seen, I would have liked to seen her decision of whether she should stay or should her go, and wrestle with that a bit.
Right. Instead, and this gets to one of the comments we got back, Stephen Jenkins, who's at Stephen L. Jenkins, that's Stephen P.H., at Stephen L. Jenkins on Twitter, he said, "Scout's reversal/forgiveness of Atticus, he felt ruined the book for him. It seemed rushed and not true to her character." And I agree with that, don't you? It did. Those final chapters did feel a bit rushed.
Yes, it was this sort of, let's tie this up neatly.
write in another feedback I got from my own mother. Was my own mother was like, boy, and it wasn't even about the book. She was like, you know, Bubba, I listen to you on the podcast, and it feels like you're bashing all Southerners, and you feel like all Southerners deserve to be bashed. And of course, here at the end, we saw Jean Louise about to really go to town on Aunt Alexandra, and Aunt Alexandra tears up, and she realizes, oh, I shouldn't attack her. And I guess what I would say is that Uncle Jack said that there were people in the town, in Macomb County there, who agreed with Jean Louise's opinion. But because we never met them, because we never saw them, you know, it's not enough for Uncle Jack to say they're there, but because we never saw them, you know, I feel like the characters that we do encounter, they were all kind of bad. They were all relatively prejudiced and racist people. And so if we had met some of those people that Uncle Jack says are there, maybe I wouldn't have bashed them so much. I don't know.
Well, I think that what I think in her handling of race, and this is like what all writers, the fundamental rule in writing 101 is show, don't tell.
Right. Good point. So
I think that her problem is she painted these characters. Again, she just told us they were, you know, they're part of the KKK. They go to these citizens' councils. And, you know, in some passages, particularly towards the end where she's confronting, I mean, it almost read like a play, you know, just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And there was no showing, right? There was no telling. I mean, you can talk, you can portray racism, but show it. Don't, like, just hit us over the head with it.
Well, I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, was there ever a scene in the novel where we saw a white person having interactions with a black person, and that white person wasn't Jean Louise? Like, we never saw Atticus interact with a black person. We never saw Aunt Alexandra. We never saw Uncle Jack or Henry, did we? I can't remember.
No, I don't think so, because Calpurnia wasn't around.
Right.
And, you know, it's interesting you make that point, because in the first in To Kill a Mockingbird, we do see Calpurnia and Atticus have scenes on their own.
Well, I think that would have been one way you could have shown that Atticus, you know, Atticus, I think it is good that if you remove To Kill a Mockingbird from it, I do think it is good that Atticus is a complex character. He's not a member of the Klan. He does believe in justice, and yet he does have these terrible ideas that certainly nowadays seemed just completely terrible, and somehow maybe back in the 50s seemed nuanced, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. I mean, maybe colorblind was a term, you know, was a progressive term in the 50s. I don't know.
We had some more feedback. We had Peter, who's at Baga 2007. That's Bagga 2007 on Twitter. And he asked us the question I think a lot of people would ask is, do you think they will make a movie of Go Set a Watchman? The To Kill a Mockingbird movie is a classic, as everybody knows. What do you think, Tasha? Would they make a movie of this, Go Set a Watchman?
I hope not.
Why not?
Well, because, I mean, what is there to make, you know? There's no trial. There's no nothing. It's just her spewing stuff.
Well, that said, one of the things we all know that we hate is when movies get made of books, is how much they change stuff. This might be the one instance where the movie might change stuff and it might be better. We'd be like, oh, thank goodness they changed that. Or thank goodness they created this scene.
Right. Maybe they created the actual second trial. Maybe you see this sort of dynamics between the NAACP lawyers and Atticus. It would, yeah, like create some sort of scene. And the other thing is that they didn't really create, it's interesting, she talks about all these scenes, you know, the handful of scenes where we see the racism and seeing the sort of women caddy, there was no real tension or conflict. And I think that's what was missing during these scenes. It's just, I mean, there are hints of it, but there's no real tension. It's just her putting, it's just, you know, these characters just spewing things.
Right. And okay, so let's hold off on some more thoughts until we get to the end. I think because of the controversy about it, I don't think anybody will rush to make a movie about this novel. But stranger things have happened. It certainly sold enough a lot to where Hollywood might think they could make some money off of making a movie. Let's jump back and jump to chapter 15 In chapter 15, let me give a quick little synopsis of it. Jean Louise, she starts off by asking herself why she came back home at all. And I kind of, at times during reading it, I had the exact same question. And so we have another, you know, memory, and the reminiscing is the strongest parts of this book, where she reminisces about the commencement dance with Henry and her, as she terms, false bosoms. We see Dr. Jack, Uncle Jack, taught her how to dance. Henry, this is one that they might change for the movie, because Henry apparently wore a tan jacket with blue pants and a light blue tie. I thought that might be an odd look.
Yeah.
What do you think about a tan jacket with blue pants?
I mean, that does seem a little odd. Hopefully they were navy blue pants and the shirt was a light blue.
Yeah, we're going to have an episode of What Not to Wear with in Macon County Dances. Jean Louise, she refers to Jem's dates as wearing slave bracelets. This is the girl from the other county, the Jem, you know, the Romeo and Juliet. Jem's making the mistake of dating somebody in a different county and not bringing his sister.
Yeah.
Hank, who, like all characters in this novel, you know, he is a bit complex. He does have a positive side, and I want to say he stands up for Jean Louise's body image. He's like, you're beautiful, you don't need to wear these fake things. And sure enough, he throws them out into the night, and of course, that comes back later. The next day, when the principal, who's an outsider, so what does that mean, of course? He's disliked because he's not, at least he's not a Yankee. He's from Mississippi. Right. And he is upset at these false bosoms hanging from the sign.
That was great.
Yeah, that was great. That was fun. Henry, who we're going to have a big confrontation with in the next chapter, but Henry stood up for Jean Louise. All the school children stood up for her. And so these people who she hates for their prejudice, you know, their prejudiced nature and their racist nature, the town did stand up for her then. So the town has duality as well. This town of Macon is capable of some decency, don't you think?
Yeah, of course. I mean, in this particular, the way that Henry helped to save Jean Louise was very clever, right? Gets a little advice from Atticus and is sort of the little lawyer in making, but has everyone claim they're not theirs, you know, which the presumption is everybody wears falsies, which I thought was great. Again, this is when she goes back into history and creates her childhood and creates an entire scene. It's clever and it's funny. They all stood up, but I think they stood up in a way, again, you know, it's a show, don't tell. This is a great example of how even the rest of the Macon County children can be a little bit rebellious against norm.
Or let's go the other way. Maybe it just proves that Macon County starts hating authority when they're young. You know, they hate, as adults, they hate the Supreme Court, they hate the federal government, they hate anybody who's not from Macon County. As children, they hate authority, aka the principal. So different ways to take it. But once again, a strong chapter. Why? Because there's action, and because it's not touching, comically, it's not touching on race at all. Maybe that helps too. So in chapter 16,
yeah.
So chapter 15 was the past, Henry and Jean Louise. Chapter 16 is the present. And this is where Jean Louise and Henry have coffee at the drugstore. And Jean Louise finally just flat out tells him she's not going to marry him. Is that the right move? And what took her so long?
Well, yes. I mean, obviously, we called it from the beginning that we didn't think that these two were right for each other. Unfortunately, we don't really see too much of how they were ever, he was even ever a possibility, in my opinion. I mean, you know, it's like, sure, Henry, the teenager, the young guy, he was a great friend, but he even then, you know, I just didn't see, I don't know. She says she won't marry him. And I'm thinking, was there really, other than him just picking her up from the train station, was it even ever a possibility in her mind?
Well, even back in the dance in the previous chapter, it did not play like a great romance. That's for sure.
No, not at all.
She finally comes clean and attacks and says, hey, I saw you at this citizen council. What are you doing, Henry? You're supposed to be smarter than this. And Henry's defense, I got to be honest, it is a weak defense, but it's the strongest one as opposed to Atticus or Uncle Jack. I'm willing to at least give Henry some slack. I think it's wrong, but he's telling her that the Citizens Council, you know what, Jean-Louise, is really just in opposition to the Supreme Court ruling. And he tells her that because of who he is, because he's a Clinton, not a Finch, the town, you know, won't respect him, doesn't give anything. So as what he feels where he came from in life, he has to toe the town line. And he's implying that he's even voting against his conscience. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think that was probably one of the better passages about Henry, because he was being honest and he gives giving him his own sort of personal story. And you know what? He's right. I mean, you saw what Alexandra tells her about him. And the thing is that gives a layer of complexity that that gives you a sense of like where he's coming from. I think the whole claim of Citizens Council is just an opposition to the court. That's just an argument, a red herring. But the part about where he's saying he's right, he has to toe the line. He's not a Finch. She can get away with a lot. And I thought her reaction to that was not mature.
Well, she calls him a hypocrite.
Well, that, but I mean, I can't believe she didn't like point out in her mind. I can't believe it. You know, I just find that it's, again, this is the lack of slight immaturity here, where I was like, I was expecting her to be a little like sharper and realize that's the case. She can get away with a lot. She can do what she can because she's a Finch.
All right. Well, I want to tackle this, though, from Henry's perspective. Say you are looked upon as poor white trash. Say you're Henry, people look down on you. Number one, why do you want to stay in the town if people treat you like that? But number two, do you really have to toe the line, even if it goes against your conscience, if it goes against your watchman, Henry? Do you, because you're trying to set up a business and your business are going to be all these white people in town, do you have to toe the line and kind of go to the Citizens Council for not racial reasons, but just kind of business reasons, for societal reasons? Or what could Henry do to be one of those people that Uncle Jack says exists in the town that don't agree with this stuff?
I mean, it's a small town. First of all, I don't think it's that easy for anyone to just get out of their town where they grew up. I know we did, but I don't think in those times it was that easy. And, you know, the desire to assimilate to the majority is a very strong, powerful desire, no matter how it may not mashed with your complete conscience. Most people want to belong and not be ostracized.
All right, but could you belong? Is there any way in 1950s Alabama that you could belong and still fight for progress?
I think you would have to do it secretly. I think the fight would be secret. That's my guess. I don't know, but it didn't seem like it would be that easy to fight against the norm. I mean, I know that's how the change did happen. It's interesting, we're recording this on the day that Julian Bond has passed away, former head of the NAACP. But I don't think that if you're I think you would have to fight in secrecy.
Secret society, just like...
just like the Citizens Council. They formed their own. Except for the fact that people in power, someone like Jean-Louise, could do a lot more, right? Because she is a Finch. I mean, usually the people that can bring about change are the ones already in power, who are sort of...
And ones respected in town, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's get to chapter 17. This is it. This is the apex of the novel. This novel has been building towards this confrontation. Jean-Louise has had it out with her pseudo-boyfriend Henry, and now it's time to have it out with her father, Atticus. And Atticus, he says things that certainly, once again, from a modern sensibility, are just terrible. And when you read this chapter, Tasha, did you hate Atticus? How did you feel?
I just thought Atticus was poorly... I didn't like him. I thought that, you know, when they started talking, he definitely had that lawyer speak where he was trying to draw out her points about the government and how the change happened and how, you know, it happened too soon and things like that. So he had a very lawyerly sort of method about him. But, I thought, again, he was a little condescending to her. But I think that's the way that she came across at times. And then I just think that he sort of lacked that emotion, which I found quite annoying about him.
All right. Well, one of the things he claims is Atticus claims that he goes to the Citizens Council, once again, because he hates the Supreme Court, or disagrees with the Supreme Court ruling, I should say, and he disagrees with the NAACP's tactics. Now, Jean Louise, this is part of the many points in the novel where I didn't like her. She claims, she's like, I didn't like the Supreme Court ruling either. She hates big government. She keeps saying she's for states' rights. She keeps saying yes when Atticus refers to black population there as backwards people and all this stuff. She would say yes to that. But she finally flips, and while she didn't like the verdict of the Supreme Court, she believes that they had to do it.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? Because I was really getting sick of both of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, well, and then doesn't she get to the point where she says they had to do it because we wouldn't?
Right. Yeah, she says that.
So, I mean, there is that point to be made, but I think, again, this was where I go back, is that there it doesn't read like a book or a story. Like, what does she think about that? What's her opinion about that, right? And they did it because they wouldn't, and that's an awful thing, and we're at failure for not, like, helping, advocating for our own people, that kind of thing. Like, I was waiting for that, and it didn't happen. So, yeah, I agree with you. I just found that whole confrontation scene to be not particularly well done.
Atticus claims that all the black people in Macomb County are, once again, backwards people, unable to share fully in the responsibility of citizenship. And he says that because he's a Jeffersonian, a.k.a. you must earn the right to participate in government.
Right.
And it's when Jean Louise finally starts fighting, and she says the problem is us, more just real hate spews out of Atticus, and Jean Louise rips him a new one. And Jean Louise gets to a point where she thinks, boy, if Atticus had only raised her dumb and ignorant, she might have been happier because she would have been blissfully naive. Atticus, boy, this drives me crazy. He believes O'Hanlon, this really bigoted, racist bastard, was paid by some Massachusetts group. It's the Yankees once again. Here we go. Oh my
Here we
goodness,
go, blame the Yankees. Blame the Yankees. Yeah, that's always a sort of tired explanation of things. It's like, let's just excuse let's divert our own faults by blaming the Yankees.
Well, Jean Louise says the problem is us, and she's right.
Yeah.
And I'm a bit shocked that Atticus can't see it. Jean Louise says, quote, Atticus, you put your hand in front of them, meaning black Americans, as a people, and say, stop here. This is as far as you can go. That's what she keeps saying.
And she's right.
She is right.
She's right. That I do think is, I mean, I think that everything she was saying is right. I think it's the way it came out was sort of, like I said, it read like a play. I would have wanted to see this on a stage. Uh-oh, they may make this into a play.
Are they made To Kill a Mockingbird into a famous play? Sure, why not?
Right. But yeah, I wanted to see his reaction to that, right? Like, how does he react except for just what he says?
Right, but he gets her back with, quote-unquote, the fact that he still loves her and that he is not, he may attack her positions as what he says are naive, but he will not attack her. She is his daughter. And so she runs, and she wants to get out of town. Is that the right move? What is the right move? Admittedly, this leads into our next chapter. Well, what is the right move for Jean Louise here? Stay and try to wise up her friends, or realize these people are buffoons, I need to leave?
I think she should have gone. I think that...
Okay.
Because I don't think she... I think that had she shown some sort of... had she done a little more to challenge those ladies, like in public, or had she done a little bit more to challenge some of the people in public, or the flip side is, had she done a little more to just become sort of friends with some of, you know, you had other characters other than Calpurnia and become closer to them, then I think she would have been able to, I would say, sure, stay and fight. But I don't think, I don't know, there's something about her that this character, Jean Louise, does not have the fight in her. Sure, she can challenge her dad, and I know that that's a big, big step to challenge your own parent, but it doesn't, again, it didn't seem, I don't know, it didn't seem, it didn't seem like she has it in her for the long haul.
Well, let's get to chapter 18. Jean Louise thinks to herself, if he had fought her fairly, saying if Atticus had fought her fairly. And she keeps thinking that these arguments she gets into with Uncle Jack and Atticus, that they're not fighting fair, that they're using legal talk and that kind of stuff. What do you think? Did Atticus fight with his daughter fairly?
Well, I mean, they are using legal talk. Uncle Jack, for sure. And Atticus, I think you start to see a little bit of his character when he, you know, that sort of patronizing concept of like the Negroes cannot, they can't vote yet. They're not fully formed people. That sort of, you know, that you started to see a little bit of that. But did they fight fair? I mean, how do you fight fairly when you're talking about race? Like, there is no fair fight, right?
That's where I think so much of this book in this actual chapter 18 falls apart for me, in that Uncle Jack and Dr. Jack, you know, number one, he backhands his daughter, and I'm not so good about that.
Yeah.
But when, you know, that line I did like about the time your friends need you is when they're wrong. They don't need you when they're right. But it's not like they're a little wrong. You know, it's not like, okay, you know, it's not like the, it's not like this is a real debate where there are really two quote unquote good sides. You know, there's, and so it's hard.
Yeah. I mean, there's only one, right? There's only one side to this. And then it's trying to understand how other people think to avoid, you know, change.
Aunt Alexandra thinks that the expression "for Christ's sake" is a Yankee expression. So, you know, that's trouble there.
Yeah, exactly.
But Aunt Alexandra, you know, she might be the poster child for the novel. And what I mean by that is that she's a racist, she's stuck up, she's old-fashioned, she just drives everybody crazy. But when Jean Louise hurts her feelings and makes her cry, you know, I think the author wants us to think that that was the wrong thing to do. And so the idea is that even a racist, stuck-up, old-fashioned lady who's living in the past, you shouldn't make her cry, you shouldn't attack her, you shouldn't hurt her feelings. Tasha, do you agree with that statement?
I think, you know what? If you had asked me this in my teenage years, John, I would say this is ridiculous. Of course you need to, like, point out to people all their faults and where they're wrong. But now, as I've aged and I see the, you know, these older people, I think it's a waste of time.
Okay, so specifically, don't hurt their feelings.
Well, it's not about hurting. Well, I think the only thing you could do is you're not going to correct their misperception of things. So if you do sort of open up some wounds, you are hurting their feelings.
Now, Uncle Jack and Atticus, they aren't the Klan. Let's be completely clear about this. They aren't the Klan. They aren't, you know, the true troublemakers in this world at this time. But they are holding people back. They are oppressing people. So how much sympathy do Atticus and Uncle Jack deserve because they're not the Klan?
They don't get much sympathy. I mean, that I think is the problem, is that we did not see either one of these characters, Atticus, Henry a little bit when you see them as children, but as actual human beings, even when she has that confrontation scene, it just seems so like, here are the arguments against desegregation and here are the arguments for it. Like, it's like if someone had just taken a news article and wrote the pros and cons and she just put it into Atticus's words.
All right.
That's the problem.
The chapter ends, chapter 18 ends with Uncle Jack in love, admitting that he was always in love with Jean Louise and Jem's mother.
Where does that come from?
Yeah, well, Tasha, you took the question right from me. What is the point of that?
I don't know. Like, why, like, why bring that up now?
Well, I think it's to prove that he's always loved her and that she's more than just a niece to him. She's the child he should have had or wanted. I don't know. What did you think the point of it was, other than creepy family, you know, family drama? It suddenly became the Jerry Springer show.
Yeah, exactly. There, and of course, and there was a second of I was waiting for her and him to say, "You really are my daughter."
Oh, man, like, that would have been a real soap opera.
Yes, but I don't know. It just came out of blue.
Were you okay with, now I'm sure this wasn't even okay in the 50s, but nowadays, were you okay with Uncle Jack backhanding her?
No.
And smacking a woman?
No.
He had never smacked a woman his whole life. He was due.
Yeah, exactly. You got to do it once, right?
Oh, Uncle Jack.
I mean...
But then the novel even almost presents him, once again, as suffering just as much. You know, like, this hurts me just as much as it hurts you. Smack.
Well, I think the problem with him slapping her like that, beyond just the fact that don't hit people, but is that it made her sound like she was crazy. Like she's the crazy one and she's having a woman, what they called back in the old days, the hysterical episode, right? Where they, oh no, women are acting crazy. They're acting hysterical. We need to just like electroshock them so that they can get out of their hysericalness, right? So like if someone, if a woman spewed, if she was like arguing or if she disagreed or if she was mad or angry or just did anything outside of the nice, pleasantries, they were considered crazy or something. And I think that her, like him, like slapping her like that is just another way of me thinking, like portraying her as the crazy one for that time period.
Well, I would say all our listeners can look up the definition and the history of the word hysterical and they'd find some sexist stuff in there. So, it was wrong. The whole book is ending on kind of a sour note for some people. And now let's just get to the end of the book, chapter 19. And my really only note from this chapter was, quote, oh, well. It felt like it just ended. She's going. She tells Henry that she's not going to marry him. But, hey, we're on for tonight at 7:30. Everything's back to normal. She can have a conversation and she can look at her father no longer as a god, but as a man. The end. Thoughts?
It's just this neat, tied up situation. I love you. I love you very much. That's all like she kind of says to Atticus. And it's, she's hanging out with Henry. I mean, I think the indication is she's staying.
Right. That's how I took it, too. And how do you feel about that as a reader?
Well, I thought the ending was awful. I mean, she can stay and that's fine, but this just made it sound like chapter 18 never happened.
Right. Yeah. In some ways. Well, once again, if the time your friends need you is when they're wrong, I wonder how Jean Louise is going to help her friends because they're all wrong. And this book gives us no taste of that.
No, and she does, and definitely not chapter 19, the way it ends. So I can't tell if the reason why she's staying is because of what Uncle Jack said about when your friends need you is when they're wrong. And so she's now taken it upon herself to be like, I'm going to be part of the counter movement of Macomb County, or I'm going to be the voice of conscience, or I'm going to be the watchman. That would have been a nice sort of like...
Yeah, that would have been
nice. I'm going to be the watchman for these people who don't see it themselves, or something like that. But there's just none of that.
No, not at all. Tasha, I'm going to read another bit of feedback we got in. This is from Brian. He says, Ghost had a watchman, quote, it was ... not good. Brian wrote, politically, it's horrible, but since it's a 55-year-old book, I expected that. The last half of the book is a solid wall of people, quote, mansplaining the South to Scout who grew up there.
I like it. I like the first, the use of mansplaining. For those of us on Twitter, I've seen that word used a lot.
All right, hold on. Yeah, let me finish up Brian's review. He says, as such, the first problem is boredom. Nothing's happening but talk. And that talk is the worst mealy-mouthed pap. And so he says, the first half of the book, there are parts that he liked and enjoyed, but it has none of the velocity or charm of To Kill a Mockingbird. That was Brian. Thank you for that feedback, Brian. And yeah, I always keep saying how I thought it would be a miracle if this book was good. I would say there are good things in this book, but it is not a good book. Tasha, would you tell people to read this book, even if just for the kind of history of it?
I would say read it if you want to see how, and then go read To Kill a Mockingbird, and then you can see how, like, something, how bad writing can become good writing.
Okay.
But I think I would say read it also if you're interested in seeing how maybe some of the viewpoints of what it may have been like for people who are resistant to change. I think you could get some idea, but I think that most people know what these arguments are.
Right.
I don't think these arguments are anything new. I don't think it sheds anything new light on what people are thinking in the 1950s.
No, I agree. I think the South, you know, I feel so guilty because Mom said I was beating up all the Southerners, specifically the Southerners in this fictional Macon County. In real life, the South had a lot of heroes during this time, and sadly those heroes aren't the ones you sometimes see on statues and history books about people who were really trying to make things better. And I would say I'm going to tell people not to read this book. Read To Kill a Mockingbird, love To Kill a Mockingbird, but search out other books if you're looking about this period in the South.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. It's not a particularly, I don't think, honest viewpoint. It doesn't give you a full picture.
Tasha, are there books then that you would recommend people to read? Any specific Southern-based books or books that deal with this time period that kind of deal with it in a better way than this does? The one that jumps out at mind to me is a Southern book. It's not set in this time period and doesn't really deal with racism and prejudice at all too strongly. But I always loved a good old Pat Conroy's The Prince of Tides. There's a lot of kind of melodrama in that, but there is also just a lot about life in the South. And I think that's a really great book that people could read to from all the great Southern authors we have. I think that would be a good one to read. And then I am a big fan of all things Flannery O'Connor. So that's one things I would pitch if people were looking at this book and had already read To Kill a Mockingbird. Those are two places that I would pitch people to go check stuff out. What about you?
Yeah, I would say on Pat Conroy, I would suggest his first book, which was actually nonfiction based on his time teaching during the 1960s and 70s, early 70s. He taught on those islands off the coast of South Carolina. It was called The Water is Wide. And that, to me, is one of, I think, is a great, great book about you know, just the experience of teaching in some of these old schools that were underfunded, and his sort of world, and how he had to intersect between Beaufort, South Carolina, which is sort of the fancier part of the town, and then living off these islands and teaching elementary school there. And it was a very poor school district. So, and this is actually, I think it was his first book, and it was nonfiction. It's called The Water is Wide. So that would be mine. And then, of course, you know, I mean, this is a little cheesy, but if you're thinking of trials in the South, I mean, some of John Grisham's books, I mean, I'm not a huge, you know, I mean, if you're just trying to get a sense, they're a little melodramatic, but they do take place in the South in more recent times.
No, I completely hear you. I completely hear you.
Barbara Kingsolver is a good one, too. She's a good author.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. All right, so Tasha, how could people reach you if they agree and or disagree with your review of Go Set a Watchman?
You can reach me at NatPat, NATPAT, and at Lauren Soul, LarenSoul.
You can reach me, Bubba. You can find me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim, at Fit and Trim on Twitter. Tasha, we've gone to Macomb County, but now it's time to hop on the train and get away from there. What are you going to be reading next? Are you on another book yet?
Yes, I am.
Let's hear it.
I'm reading this series by Elena Ferrante, which actually also takes place in the 1950s in Naples, Italy.
Ooh.
Yeah, and it's about, and you know, it has its own sort of historical time frame for these two sort of poor kids growing up in this one area of Naples, these two little girls, and it's a series. It's great. And I highly recommend it. There are four books in the whole series, but it starts with My Brilliant Friend, and I'm on the new one, the second book, which is called The Story of a New Name.
Cool. I am currently reading, and I've been reading this book for a bit because it's kind of like a memoir, so you can jump back and forth on it. I'm reading Stephen King's On Writing, a memoir of the craft. So we'll see if Stephen King has any Ghost at a Watchman's in him. I'm sure he's got so many novels in him, he can't stop them.
Exactly.
So, once again, thank you very much. I'm Bubba.
And I'm Tasha.
And thanks for reading along this American novel with us. Goodbye.
Thank you.